Good morning, fellowship. Good morning to you. My name is Robbie Painter. I am the director for Young Life here in Williamson County. If you're not familiar with Young Life, it is, I promise I didn't pay anybody to clap when I said that. If you're not familiar with Young Life, it's an outreach ministry to high school kids, helping kids take either their first step or their next step in a relationship with Jesus. My wife, Katie, and I have been Young Life leaders at Brentwood High School for 15 years. But more importantly, I've been a part of this church for over 20 years. First started coming here during my sophomore year of high school when I began following Jesus, back in the Franklin High School auditorium days. It was actually my senior year when we moved into this building. So it's an honor, it's a privilege. I feel very humbled to get to be on this stage opening up the Bible with you. As you just heard, Rob Sweet, our lead pastor, is on sabbatical, which means Lloyd probably asked a long list of people to talk who all said no, and then they got to me. So that's how we have arrived here this morning. When I was in college at the University of Tennessee, Go Vols, right outside of Knoxville, there was this corn maze. And right before Halloween, it would turn into a haunted corn maze. It was a big deal. There would be billboards all over the city about the haunted corn maze, you know, starting on Friday. So I was hanging out with all my friends, and my friend Josh came in the room. And if you were here the last time I spoke, this is the same Josh who I snuck in the World Series with. So Josh, he always has these wild ideas. And so he came into the room. He's like, guys, I had an idea. We were like, oh boy, here we go. He's like, all right, so you know how the haunted corn maze is happening on Friday. He's like, I called the corn maze director and I told him I was a high school choir teacher. And we were like, what? He's like, hold on, it gets better. We're like, all right. He's like, so I told him we're this award-winning choir and I made up all these awards that we had won. And I told him we were gonna come on Friday to the haunted corn maze for a field trip. And I asked him if he would let us all in for free if we put on a performance for everybody. And he said, yes. And we were like, wait, what? Like, who thinks of this? He just did that on his own. But at the same time, we were like, oh, game on, right? Here we go. So we recruited all of our friends. We were all Young Life leaders in college. There were about 30 of us. We jumped in cars on Friday off to the haunted corn maze. We are driving to the corn maze, listening to the number one radio station in Knoxville. In between songs, the DJ comes on the air and goes, hey everybody, we're broadcasting live from the haunted corn maze tonight. Come on out and say hello. And we were like, oh, we're gonna say hello, all right. So we're driving, Josh calls the radio station, talks to the DJ, gives him the whole spiel, a fake name, this high school choir teacher, award-winning choir, so many awards. We've been asked to perform at the corn maze tonight, just wanna know if you would let us on the radio. And he said yes. And we were like freaking out, we're like, no way. But if I'm being honest, the whole time my thought was, we're gonna show up, right? This corn maze director is gonna see us and he's gonna know immediately. We're not a high school choir, right? We're a bunch of college kids trying to prank him. We showed up. He was so excited to see us. He shook all of our hands, gave us this VIP tour of the place. He had built a stage, a stage with lights and everything for our performance. And it was at this moment that I was like, oh no, we're gonna have to perform. There are hundreds of people here. This is like a huge deal. And so we get in single file lines and we march on the stage. We have two rows, I'm in the back middle, and we're all standing like this. I don't even know if you stand like this in choir. We just guessed you do this. So we're standing like this. My heart is like beating out of its chest. Everyone is gathered. The song we decided to sing was God Bless the USA, Proud to Be an American. That was our song. Our encore song was gonna be Silent Night. It's October. Spoiler alert. There was no encore, okay? Silent Night never happened. So we're standing there like this. Josh is on the mic that is live on the number one radio station in Knoxville. By the way, Josh is wearing a full tuxedo, okay? He's on the mic, introduces us, this fake choir, all these awards he made up, asked to perform for everybody, our award-winning number. And Josh, he didn't tell us he was gonna do this. He had the mic. He somehow got his hands on like a pitch whistle. To start, he was like, beep, and we all like got ready. And so Josh starts conducting and we start singing and it sounds horrible. From the first note, you realize like we didn't even practice it. You're like, you realize you don't know that song, you just know the chorus, proud to be, you know, so we're like humming parts of it, getting words wrong. People started, they were like this, and very quickly they were like, And then they just started filming us. And we're giving it all we got, right? I'm in the back middle. I had the privilege of being the cymbals and the crescendo of the song where it's like, and I gladly stand up. And I went, psh, you know, as loud as I could. The last note comes and we hold that note for as long as we had air in our lungs. We were like, God bless the USA. You know, as long as we could. We finished, we're like, looking around, and I promise, like four people were like, that was it. And we bowed, and then we just scattered into the corn maze. 30 college kids just sprinting into the corn maze. Circled back in our cars and immediately went home. Like every July 4th, I'll hear that song on the radio and I just flash back to that moment, my heart just beating out of my chest. I like to think of that poor corn maze director. He's like driving his car and that song comes on the radio and he flashes back to the moment 30 college kids pranked him. He's like shaking his head, a little tear as he like sings along to the song. The reason I share that story is that that idea of a flashback, right? We've all had them. Something happens, kind of triggers a memory, and you immediately go back to that moment. This morning, as we have finally arrived at the last chapter in the book of John, can I get an amen? Amen. We're here. In the section we're going to read this morning, I think we're going to see three different flashbacks that happen in the story. John, he does not explicitly say they're happening. But I think if you read between the lines, you're going to see these three flashbacks. Before we jump in, raise your hand if you've ever seen a Marvel movie in the theaters before. Marvel movie in the theaters. Okay, good amount of you. Now hold on, keep your hand up. Keep your hand up if you stayed to the very end of the movie, past the credits, to see the post-credits scene. Okay, yeah, a lot of you. So many of you know, Marvel movies have kind of become famous for these post-credit scenes. The movie ends, the long list of names scroll and they scroll, and all of a sudden a bonus scene pops up at the very end of the movie. In a lot of ways, John 21 feels like a post-credit scene of the movie. Like when John 20, where we ended last week, it feels like the end of the book. John's like, I've written all of this so you may believe in Jesus and through that belief, find eternal life. Can't you see like the movie fades to black, the credits roll, you know, written by John, directed by God, the little disciples' names go by. And then all of a sudden, the screen flashes. We have another scene, a post-credit scene, John 21. We're gonna walk through it together, starting in verse 1. After this, Jesus revealed himself again to the disciples by the Sea of Tiberias. And he revealed himself in this way. Simon Peter, Thomas called the twin, Nathanael of Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two others of his disciples were together. Simon Peter said to them, I'm going fishing. They said to him, we'll go with you. They went out, got into the boat, but that night they caught nothing. Okay, so picture it. The scene flashes on the screen. We've got seven disciples in a room together. The last time we saw them, they were back in Jerusalem, John 20. Jesus appeared to them for the second time. He let Thomas, you know, put his hands in the wounds. But now the disciples, they're back home in Galilee. Okay, so they haven't seen Jesus for a few days, maybe a week or more. They're all together talking, and Peter's like, well, I'm going fishing. The disciples are like, all right, we'll go with you. Commentators, they don't know, is this a sign of Peter like doubting? Kind of getting antsy, tired of waiting around for Jesus, like, what's going on? So it's like, well, I guess we can just go back to being fishermen. Or are they just hungry? Right? They just need to go get some food for their family, so off they go fishing. We don't know the motive. But John tells us that they go out, they fish all night, and they catch what? Nothing. Think about that. Seven guys fishing all night. They catch nothing. Zero. The story continues. Verse 4. Just as day was breaking, Jesus stood on the shore, yet the disciples did not know that it was Jesus. Jesus said to them, children, do you have any fish? They answered him, no. He said to them, cast the net on the right side of the boat and you'll find some. So they cast it. And now they were not able to haul it in because of the quantity of fish. The disciple whom Jesus loved therefore said to Peter, it's the Lord. All right, so picture it. The sun's coming up, okay? And Jesus is on the shore. Later, we find out the disciples are about 100 yards off. So picture a football field, Jesus in one end zone, the disciples 100 yards in the other end zone out in the water. And Jesus yells, "Hey fellas, haven't you caught any fish?" It feels like throwing salt in a wound of no fish for a whole night. Because they yell back, "No!" He says they don't recognize this Jesus. I don't know if he's just so far away. Maybe they're not even looking. Maybe there's like fog on the water. And so he yells back, "Why don't you try the other side of the boat?" At this point, if I'm a disciple, I'm like, "Who is that guy? Like, leave us alone. And we've been fishing all night. You don't think we've tried both sides of the boat?" But they decide, okay, we'll give it a shot. Throw out the nets. And the fish just start piling in. Fish just like jumping in the net. And it's at this moment, I think, we are supposed to see our first flashback. 3 years earlier, Luke chapter 5, these same disciples on this same lake, probably in this same boat, they fished all night. They caught nothing. Jesus shows up. He says, "Hey, let your nets down one more time." You know the story. They let the nets down and the fish just pile in. The nets almost rip. And it's actually after that story that Peter, James, and John, they surrender everything. They leave everything and they follow Jesus. That was the moment they decided, "We're following." And they follow Jesus with their life. Can't you see it in the story? Can't you see John throwing out the net and all these fish pile in the net? And he flashes back. He's like, "Wait a second. That's Jesus. That's the Lord." And then you've got Peter. This is my favorite. This is my favorite part of the story. Just picture this in your mind. Second half of verse 7. "When Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put on his outer garment, for he was stripped for work, and he threw himself into the sea. The other disciples came in the boat, dragging the net of fish, for they're not far from land, but about 100 yards off." You've got to love Peter, right? Peter's like a ready, fire, aim kind of guy. You know, quick to talk, quick to action, a little slower in the thinking department at times. There's so many examples of this throughout scripture, right? Three of my favorites. You got Peter in the boat, the disciples, it's storming. Jesus is walking on water, remember? It says they're terrified. So Peter just is like, "If that's really you, tell me to come to you on the water." Jesus is like, "Oh, come on." And Peter's like, "Uh-oh." Like, "Oh boy, what have I done?" You got Peter and his friends in the upper room. There's that really intimate moment where Jesus is gonna wash their feet, right? Peter is feeling uneasy, doesn't know what to do. He just blurts out, "You'll never wash me." Jesus is like, "Hey, Peter, I'm kind of trying to do something here." And he's like, "Okay, then wash all of me." Jesus is like, "Peter, just your feet." He's like, "Sorry." My favorite by far, in the garden, coming to get Jesus. You know what? Peter gets a sword, just like shring out of nowhere, just starts going crazy. And he cuts off a guy's ear. Jesus is like, "Peter, what are you doing?" He puts the, grabs the ear, puts it back on the guy. Peter's like, "Sorry, Jesus." You know, Peter's like a third grader with ADHD, just going crazy all the time. In the story, John's like, "It's the Lord." Peter's like, "Oh." Says he grabs all of his clothes. I guess he's fishing in his undies. He grabs his clothes and it says he throws himself in the water. I don't know about you, but when I hear "throws himself," I don't picture like a graceful swan dive with minimal splash. I see Peter grabs his clothes and then just launches into the water. It's like a huge splash, hits the rest of the disciples. They're like, "Oh, come on, Peter." Peter doesn't even stay to help. He's hitting the breaststroke while the rest of the disciples are having to deal with all these fish and getting them in and rowing all the way back to shore. They're probably like rowing. They're like, "Classic Peter." So they get to the shore. We'll continue, verse 9. "When they got out on land, they saw a charcoal fire in place with fish laid on it and bread. Jesus said to them, 'Bring some of the fish that you've just caught.' So Simon Peter went aboard and hauled the net ashore full of large fish, 153 of them. And although there were so many, the net was not torn. Jesus said to them, 'Come and have breakfast.' Now none of the disciples dared ask him, 'Who are you?' They knew it was the Lord." Okay, they get to shore. And Jesus, he's got breakfast. Oh, this little charcoal fire, some bread, some fish. And then he says, hey, bring some of the fish you just caught, which is an interesting thing to say. Because did the disciples catch any fish? No, they caught zero fish. Jesus could have said, hey, bring me some of the fish I just caught. But he doesn't. And I love this little thought. We don't have time to go into it, but I got this from Del Brunner. That Jesus sees the work that he does through the disciples as work they're a part of doing, that they do. The same way for us, like Jesus sees what he's doing in you, what he's doing through you as work that you're doing, that you're a part of that. And that's encouraging to me. It says they catch 153 fish. They write it down. Their biggest catch ever. Here's something I know about guys, okay? Us guys, we love records, right? We're always keeping score. We always kind of know who's at the top or who has the best of this, always. You get a bunch of guys in a room, it does not take long till some guy's like bragging about some obscure, meaningless record. Like, oh, back when I was in high school, I ate 15 slices of pizza in one night. The guys are like, oh my gosh, that's awesome. I had this friend, this was in college. I went to the dentist, I had a cavity. And I was with my friends and I was telling them about it. My friend Casey, I promise this is a true story. My friend Casey was like, oh yeah? So I went to the dentist last year. I hadn't been to the dentist in 7 years. I had 35 cavities. I was like, that's more than one cavity per tooth. He was like, I know, pretty cool, right? Lord help us guys. But can't you see the disciples counting the fish? 151, 152, 153 fish. Giving each other high fives and chest bumps. And Jesus just kind of laughing, shaking his head. In this section, I think we have our second flashback. This one's harder to see. This one's a little more hidden. Psychologists say that your sense of smell is your sense that's most directly tied to memory. That ever happened to you? You smell something and you're like immediately taken back somewhere. Like when I smell fresh cut grass, I'm immediately transported back to Little League baseball and the Civitan baseball fields growing up. A charcoal fire has a very distinct smell to it. And so I just wonder, is Peter kind of cold from his morning swim, is by that fire and he smells that charcoal, if he didn't flashback to the last charcoal fire he was around. Not too long ago, back in John 18, Jesus was arrested. You know the story, it says this. The servant girl at the door said to Peter, you also are not one of this man's disciples, are you? He said, I'm not. Now the servants and officers had made a charcoal fire because it was cold, and they were standing and warming themselves. Peter also was with them, standing and warming himself. As we know, Peter goes on to deny Jesus two more times around that charcoal fire. Whereas the first flashback had to have been to the greatest moment of Peter's life, deciding to surrender everything and follow Jesus. The second flashback had to be the worst moment of his life. Doing the very thing he promised Jesus he would never do just the night before. So as Peter standing there by that fire, with his mind and his heart drawn to his denial, the weight of that guilt and shame hanging heavy around his neck, Jesus doesn't give him a speech or a stern talking to. He doesn't criticize him, condemn him. He doesn't say, Peter, man, I literally told you were gonna do it. I told you to do it three times. How did you not at least remember after the first? But you just kept on going, didn't you? Right when I needed you the most, Peter. Jesus doesn't do that. What's he do? He cooks him breakfast. He cooks Peter breakfast. And as you probably know, a meal back in Jesus' time was so much more than just a meal. A meal was a sign of unity, of fellowship. It was a sign of friendship. You know, I've heard Lloyd use this quote before, and he said that Food is God's love made edible. Food is God's love made edible. And so it's Jesus, he's taking Peter directly back into the moment of his biggest failure. And he's turning it into an opportunity for him to feast on the forgiveness and the love of God. Breakfast over a charcoal fire. Now, I can't prove these flashbacks are happening, right? But I think that John is putting these dots in the story, hoping that we will connect them as we start reading carefully and like, oh my gosh. So what does this story teach us? What does this have to do with us 2,000 plus years later? There's a quote from this guy I love. His name is A.W. Tozer. It's a great name. He says this. He says, "The most important thing about you is what comes in your mind when you think about God." The most important thing about you is what comes in your mind, the thoughts, the ideas, the images that come in your mind when you think about God. Well, C.S. Lewis came along and he disagreed. He didn't like that quote very much. So he wrote a response. You gotta love a good theologian drama. C.S. Lewis is like, no, 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 no. The most important thing about you, it's not what comes in your mind when you think about God. The most important thing about you is what you think comes in God's mind when he thinks about you. See the difference? It's not what comes in your mind when you think of God, it's what you think comes in his mind when he's thinking of you. And when it comes to this story, I wanna ask, what do you think comes in God's mind when he thinks of you failing? What do you think comes in his mind when he sees you sin? There's this question that I always ask high school guys when I'm with them at Young Life Camp in the summer. It kind of gets to the same idea. And the question's simple, it's this. If Jesus was to walk into this room and it was just you and him, what do you think he'd say to you? What do you think he'd say? See, it's like, what do you think comes in his mind when he's, what do you think he would say to you? I've been asking that question for over 15 years, at this point to hundreds of high school kids. And 9 times out of 10, the answer they give is something negative. I think he'd say, I just need to try harder. I'm not doing enough. I think he'd say, I should probably read my Bible more. I'm not praying like I should. I think he'd tell me, I need to stop doing some of the stuff I'm doing. I need to stop drinking, and on and on. But one year, I'll never forget this. This was probably 8 or 9 years ago. I was at a Young Life camp called Frontier Ranch in Colorado. Asking that question, getting those same normal answers from guys. And then Jacob, sitting right here, that's not his real name, but Jacob called for the ball. Threw the ball, he caught it, and he goes, if I'm gonna be honest, I think that if Jesus opened up that door and he looked in and he just saw me in this room, he would just shake his head. And he'd shut the door and he'd go to the next room. And my heart, it broke. I got emotional just remembering it. And y'all, Jacob, he was no saint. He was a wild kid. He had a rough home life that led him to search for love and acceptance in some really dark and bad places. But y'all, his view of God was that Jesus wouldn't even want to be in the same room as him. We'll just skip right over him to go to the next person. And while I'm sure most of us maybe aren't that extreme in our mind when we think about Jesus and us, I wanna ask, you know, when you sin, when you fail, what do you see Jesus' posture being towards you? Like when you blow it and you just trip and fall and you were to picture Jesus, what is his posture towards you in that very moment? We're gonna go through a couple different options on the screen and see which ones maybe stick out to you. So when you sin, maybe you picture Jesus just kind of crossing his arms, just judgmental, kind of looking down from afar. It's kind of cold and distant, just frustrated with you. Or maybe you see Jesus, he's just shaking his head. Like, oh, just disappointed. Like, you should be better than that. You should be better. Maybe you picture Jesus, he's just rolling his eyes, like he's annoyed, like, oh, here we go again. Another failure. another mistake. Maybe you picture Jesus, he's just clenching his fists. He's angry. I'm sick and tired of this. I'm sick and tired of having to deal with you here. Maybe you picture Jesus, he's just throwing his hands up in the air, just giving up. He's like, you're never gonna get it. I might as well just throw in the towel. This is never gonna happen. Maybe you see him, he's just like a face palm. He's just embarrassed, like, oh my goodness. And you call yourself a Christian? Last one, maybe you picture Jesus, he's just holding his nose. He's just disgusted. You're dirty, unlovable. Wouldn't even wanna be around you. I would bet that most of us naturally lean towards one or two of these. Which one's yours? In our story, when John says, it's the Lord, and Peter looks up and he sees Jesus on the shore. If Jesus was holding any of these postures on the shore, do you think Peter would have jumped out of the boat and swam to him? No way, right? Peter looked up and saw Jesus looking like this. He probably wouldn't try to not make eye contact. He would have gone to help with the fish to do whatever he's got to do to not be in his presence. And that's because, and we'll put this on the screen, when we sin, our perceived posture of Jesus dictates our desire to be in his presence, right? When we sin, our perceived posture of Jesus in that moment directly dictates our desire, our willingness to be in his presence. When you sin, if you picture Jesus, fist clenched, arms crossed, shaking his head, then you'll never bring your whole heart to him, right? You'll cover that mistake up, you'll push it down, you'll justify it, oh, it's not that big of a deal, or you'll blame somebody else, oh, it's that person's fault, it's not my fault. You'll do whatever you gotta do to not bring it to him, to be in his presence, like a kid scared to go to the principal's office. And we don't know this for sure, but what we know of Jesus, what we know of the gospel, I think when Peter looked up and saw Jesus on the shore, I think Jesus was like this. Come here, Peter, grabs his clothes, launches himself into the water. And it's the same for us, right? Jesus's posture towards you, especially in your sin, especially in your failures and your mistakes, it is always inviting you into his presence. Saying, come here. Yeah, come here, it's okay. So this morning, which of the two flashbacks do you see yourself in? Maybe some of you this morning more relate to Peter in the first flashback. You've been around Jesus for a little while. You've been coming to church. You've been learning about him. Maybe you've even asked for forgiveness. But if you're honest, you haven't yet truly surrendered your life and followed him to put him the top priority. Maybe it's because you have some things in your past you're not proud of, some things you've done, some secrets, some things that make you feel like you're disqualified, you're too far gone. Friends, the truth of the gospel is that you cannot out-sin his forgiveness. You can't do it. In fact, it's your sin. Your sin is the very reason he wants you to come to him. It doesn't disqualify you. It's what qualifies you to come to him. Like having a broken leg qualifies you to go see a doctor. Your sin is what's saying, exactly, come here. His posture towards you is kind. It's so kind. So maybe for you today, you hear his invitation to surrender it all, to receive that forgiveness and to follow him with your life. I would bet more of us in the room more relate to Peter in the second flashback. We've been following Jesus. When we're trying as hard as we can, but we keep making mistakes. We keep tripping up and falling. Something you promised yourself you never do, you do it. You promise you never do it again, then you do it again and again and again. And maybe you're like me. Sometimes you wonder, like, have I used up all his forgiveness? Like when you first come to him, he's like happy to forgive you, but he has this kind of limited amount of forgiveness. And over the time, over the years, you just dish it out. And all of a sudden he gets to the bottom and his whole posture now changes towards you. As if his forgiveness is like training wheels. They're there for you in the beginning. Like, okay, yep, now you should be good. It's easy to understand or think about his forgiveness in the beginning, but when you're 10 years in, 20 years in, 30 years in, and you're still making a mess of it, you're still tripping up, you're still dealing with things you've been dealing with 10 years ago, has his posture changed? If you can relate to that, here's the truth that I have to preach to my own heart. In the same way that Jesus multiplied the bread and the fish to feed over 5,000 people with it back in John 6, he will likewise continue to multiply the bread and the fish over a charcoal fire for anyone who will throw themselves out of the boat and bring their sin and their failure to his breakfast table. Jesus meets you not where you should be. He meets you right where you are with the opportunity to feast on his forgiveness. And it is all you can eat. It's all you can eat. How would your relationship with Jesus change if the next time you sinned, the next time you just blew it, which will be later today, instead of viewing Jesus like this, oh, come on. You saw him going, hey, come here, it's okay. Or for you, maybe it's something in your past that's still just hanging heavy around your neck, past mistake or a secret. And you need to go back to that moment and just picture Jesus saying, come here, I forgive you. You're forgiven, come here. Guys, Jesus, he wants your whole heart. He wants your whole heart. The good, the bad, and the ugly. He wants all of it. Would you bring it to him today? Would you throw yourself out of the boat and swim towards his breakfast table? Whether it be for the first time or the 100th time, his posture is so kind. It is so kind towards you. As we begin to wrap up and the band can go ahead and come out, I said there were three flashbacks. We got one left. This one's the easiest one to see, okay? I want you to see if you can catch it as you read. See if you can pick what the flashback could be. Verse 13 and 14. Jesus came and took the bread and he gave it to them. And so with the fish. This was now the third time that Jesus was revealed to his disciples after he was raised from the dead. Any guesses? Anybody? He takes the bread and he gives it out to them. They had to have flashback to the last meal they had with him. In the upper room, Jesus taking that bread and passing it and breaking it and giving it out. The Lord's table.